Tonight is Wednesday night, January 31st, or 16th day of the month of Shvat. This is the women's Mishnah Gemara Shir Maseches Chulin. Tonight we're just doing something that relates to something we've been discussing for a couple of weeks. Okay, Rabotai. Tonight we're going to see a very interesting case that took place a couple of weeks ago, and it relates directly to something that we have learned and mentioned quite frequently, and we'll see how startling this particular halacha happens to be. Here is the case. I don't know if any of your husbands discussed it with you on Friday night. So here's the case. We're going to see all the sources inside. Many people have various people who work in your homes to assist cleaning, whatever it is. And they often travel together as a group. You can see them getting off the bus, getting on the bus on West Englewood Avenue on the 178. And one's person's I don't know what they call her.
Ozeret.
Good, the Ozeret. Overheard the following conversation that took place on the bus with the other Ozrot. One of them was saying that the husband of the family treats her particularly abusively, cruelly, speaks in an inappropriate language to her, and early on the relationship was much better, and they invited her to eat with them. She's there like full time to eat with them Friday night dinner and Shabbos lunch. Now he told her, you eat alone, you know, you can't sit at the table with us. So what she did was, to get back at them, was, this is what she's telling her other Ozrot Frodes, as the meat was cooking, she poured some milk into the pot, and nobody will ever know about it, and that's what she did. So the question which the homeowner of the Ozeret who reported this was, should they tell the people that they're not allowed to eat the food that week? Or maybe you should fire her, whatever it is. What should they do knowing with this information? So
they knew what family it was.
Yeah. Okay. They knew, yeah.
She knew who they were.
Yes. So at first blush, one would say, well, of course you can't eat the food, and all the pots have to be koshered and everything, and she'll probably be fired. So tonight we're going to see what the halacha actually says about such a situation, and it will shock you. And it's based on something that we learned today. We've mentioned this halacha several times, and the chidush is that we only apply this particular halacha in one direction, not in the other direction. Here is the halacha. The halacha is concerning Mesiach Lefitumo. If you remember correctly, I showed you a Gemara and a Shulchan Aruch about a situation where you have a piece of meat and a drop of milk fell onto it. So you know enough information. What are you supposed to do in order to determine whether you're allowed to eat that piece of meat or not?
Taste.
You taste it. So who does the tasting?
The tasting person.
What?
Expert.
Okay, that's one halacha. That's called kfela. Ti'imat kfela. We always mentioned his name, Beefsteak Charlie. That's one halacha. Then there is another halacha, we haven't spoken about it a lot, where you can ask any individual to taste it, as long as the person is totally unaware that your ability to eat this piece of meat hinges on his or her testimony. So they're just reporting off the cuff. not aware of the significance. That's called masiach, speak. Vasuach is to talk, but here it's with a samach. Masiach lefi tumo, which means somebody is speaking just haphazardly, reporting on information, and that information is acceptable lahalacha. So I will give you the most dramatic case where we apply this particular halacha of Masiach Lefi Tuma to enable a woman to remarry based on the testimony of a Gentile who said, you know, I saw that person was killed. I know he was killed. So somebody who just reports to us that this man was killed, the wife is permitted to remarry, despite the fact that under normal circumstances, you require two witnesses. Here, not only don't you have two witnesses, you don't have a kosher witness. Gentiles normally cannot testify in a Jewish court. But to remove the problem of aguna, Chazal said, the Rabbanan said, we are going to waive the requirement of two witnesses, and we're going to waive the requirement of even a kosher witness, and we'll allow that testimony to enable the woman to remarry, provided that she is unaware of the fact that her testimony is the key to her remarriage. She just reported it without knowing the significance of that statement. So that's called Masiach Lefi Tuma. So what we are going to see as a shakaru tonight, that Masiach Lefi Tuma only works to permit something, but does not work to prohibit something. Our gut intuition would be just the opposite. That if we're going to allow something and it's going to be one or the other, I would have allowed it to prohibit something, but not to permit. But the halacha is just the opposite. And we're going to see four or five cases which confirm this particular halacha.
So that would mean they could eat the thing.
So now we're going to see what that's going to be the net result. That is correct.
This was a case of Masiach.
Of course. She's talking to her friends, just information. She's not telling, she's not reporting this to a Jew. She's just telling that.
She's not a kosher witness.
She is just reporting this to her friends. The other Ozeret heard it. So she's now reporting, you know what? They put milk in.
She's not doing it with feet too much.
She is.
Why? No, she knows.
The reporter knows. That's correct. And under those circumstances, even though she's reporting it, we're going to disqualify her testimony.
Because she knows the significance.
No, not because of that. We normally have that rule about not knowing the significance when it comes to be matirit. That's when they... But here... It's not to be moderate, it's to oser it. And under those circumstances, we don't accept their testimony at all, whether they are aware of the consequences or not. Let's take a look at tonight.
Can I ask this a question? So that's saying about testimony and all that, but if you have a pretty good, her whole idea is to keep kosher. So if you have a pretty good idea that what you're eating now is not kosher, the pan's been trafed and everything,
I'm not saying that the people, once they are told, will eat it. I'm not saying. But are they allowed to eat it? They're allowed to eat it. That's the halacha.
No, but is it my obligation to tell them or not?
No,
it may not be.
But if they're told...
Because
they still could eat it. But
even if they're told, they can still eat it.
It may not be your obligation to tell them. Because they're allowed... We'll see. Let's learn it tonight. Yeah. I'm just telling you, that was the case.
There are so many vagaries to that. You don't know, let's say they made three different kinds of meat for Shabbos. You don't know what she put milk in. And you don't know if she cooked it in milk. Did she put cold milk into the meat?
Yeah, she said as it was cooking, she just took out some milk from the refrigerator and poured it into the pot.
But you also should not rely on witness, so you don't know that she really even did it. She may have just been bragging.
But we've learned all along that when one witness reports something, you can accept their opinion.
Right.
So why wouldn't you think that you can...
Right.
accept the testimony both for the stringencies and for the leniencies, not just for the leniencies. That's the shakaru part of it. Let's take a look at the various cases quoted in Shulchan Aruch or various other places. So we start on page 1 on the bottom of the page. This is a comment of the Beit Yosef on, in his commentary to the Torah. This is not the Shulchan Aruch. Same person, but the Beit Yosef wrote a commentary on the Torah. And he writes, Katav HaRashba, the Rashba wrote, Shenish'al, he was asked, Al Goy Shemachar Shtei Behemot LiYisrael. A Gentile sold two animals to a Jew. V'achar kach Omar Masiach Lefitumo. And afterwards he just happened to have said, Shehein Oto Ve'et Beno. Oto Ve'et Beno. That these two animals are related to one another. It's a parent and a child. A parent and a child. The Torah tells us in Parshat Emor, in Vayikra chapter 23, that an animal and its mother and its child are not permitted to be slaughtered on the same day. Oto ve'et beno lo tishchatu biyom echad. That's what the Torah says. It's an Issa d'Oraisa, to sacrifice a mother, and its child on the same day. On the same day. Now, this person had no clue if the family to whom he sold it slaughtered both animals on the same day, because they're making a big bar mitzvah, whatever it is, he had no clue that they were not going to be able to eat the meat of that particular animal, because it includes an isur to eat it after it has been slaughtered on the same day.
Both animals?
Both. That's correct. So the Rashba wanted to know, the Rashba was asked, can I accept this Gentile's off-the-cuff remark that the animals which I sold to you were oto ve'et beno? Do I have an obligation to believe him? So if I didn't shech them, I will be careful, number one, not to shech them. And if I did shech them already, I'm going to have to worry about what am I going to do with all this meat now? Says the Rashba. The Heshiv, and the Rashba answered, Mistabra she'eino ne'eman. It is logical unto me that what? That what? That he's not believed. He's not believed. And everybody asks the question, why is he not believed?
What was in it for him?
Nothing. That's why it's called Masiach Lefitumo. He's just talking off the air. He has no idea that the guys are going to be angry at him. Why did you tell me? Nothing. He has no idea. Says the Rashba, we don't believe him. Why don't we believe him? Because the principle of accepting a Gentile's testimony when he or she speaks in this fashion, Masiach lefi tumo or tuma, is only lahakel, lahatir, velo leesor. It cannot prohibit. So even if it in heaven they know it was otova et mino, they notice it. And even the guy who told you, it's Oisev Esmer, okay, thank you. You now go ahead and shech both of them at the same time. And you don't have to be concerned whatsoever that you're eating something prohibited, you did something wrong. It's as if the information is thrown in the garbage can. No, I know, it's shocking. Thrown in the garbage can and you don't have to worry about it. Everybody thinks the halach is so tough all the time. Here the halacha is being very, very lenient.
Because we make it tough.
I know. Very lenient. But that's case number one, quoted by the Rashba, here by the Beit Yosef. That's for Oto ve'et beno, we will not accept the testimony of a Gentile, Masiach Lefi Tumo, to prohibit you from slaughtering these two animals which you just purchased for your bar mitzvah of your son. You can go ahead and shack them together the same day.
Now, what if you hadn't yet purchased them, and you're negotiating to purchase them, and he says, by the way, this is a mother and a son?
You don't have to believe him.
You still don't have to believe
That's
him.
Correct.
Because he doesn't have any reason to believe it makes a difference to you.
I know. You don't have a reason to, you don't have to believe him.
So when is the appeaser?
If you're a Jew. A Jew tells you that. Or you raise them yourself. Or you go to a Jewish merchant, and the Jewish merchant says, please be advised, this is Osova Espino. But a Gentile, no. Yes.
So at what point do we consider a Gentile to be well-educated enough that they would know what they're saying? I mean, like, if these women who work in the Jewish houses, and they understand about Shabbos, and they understand the ovens, the lights, and the
right.
and the dairy sink, and the meat sink, there's a lot of halacha that they actually are familiar with.
Correct.
So at what point do we not disqualify them because they do know more?
We never disqualify. We always disqualify them if they're coming to like to make life miserable for us. We will never disqualify them if they're coming to make life easier for us. If they are Masiach Lefi Tumo. It's in this case, in when they're in your house, it's not Lefi Tumo any longer.
Right.
They know that if they tell you that you put milk in there, that she put milk in, you're going to blow a fuse. They know that. Mm-hmm. But here they were talking amongst themselves. They didn't think of any concert. They're on the bus, on the 178. And it's pulling up to West Englewood Avenue, up right by Sussex, right in front of Arena. 20 of them are going to get off. And they'll go in their various directions. I see all these things. They go in their various directions. So now, one of them said, you know, that's what they were talking about on the bus. Yeah.
We didn't say why yet.
That we will see. I'm going to show you six or seven cases, and that's the principle which we will extract for tonight.
Why?
There is no why. That's the halacha. There is no why. Yes. Yes.
In the kosher slaughterhouses, they just have tons of cattle.
Correct.
Do they always know?
Sure.
How do they know? Because like when farmers sell... Is that one of the, like, how do they, it seems like that would be a hard thing to enforce.
I guess, if for us, we have to keep a record. What type of an animal did we buy? Yes. They'll have to go send somebody to the farm and say.
Do they do that?
I don't know. That's a good question.
But I think the USDA has a lot of regulations, but you have to know, like, what if it's bad cattle? You have to know exactly what cattle is covered and what slaughterhouse.
Okay.
Right?
But no, her question is, how do you know that it's, when a slaughterhouse buys two cows, how do we know it's not Otova et Beno?
No, but I mean, because I'm saying the USDA probably...
No, they
but they don't record they whether it's a child.
They don't have every... They know if the farm's been checked for mad cow, stuff like that. They do certain health checks. They don't check.
Right. Good. Let's go to page number two. Page number two. Okay, now, this is now the tour, page number two, in Hilchot Ma'achalei Ovdei Kochavim, when Ma'achalei, foods of a Gentile. It talks about Bishul Akum here and various types of cases. So I'm just going to show you the tour, and then what I really want to show you is the Beit Yosef's comment on this particular siman. So if you... So much of this particular is talking about, I have meat which I purchased from a Jew but there is a Gentile who's delivering it. Do I have to assume that he's going to switch it and I'm not allowed to eat it? Or I can assume, what's in it for him to switch it? What's in it? Why is he going to switch it? So does anybody happen to know what we require when you ship things? You can see this when you get a delivery. It has to be double. It has to have a double wrap and a seal. It has to be a chotam. Now, why do we require that? Because the halacha says it could very well be that this person might switch the meat on you. And put it in the other bag, and it looks exactly like the kosher meat. Who knows why you'll want to do it? Some say because the Gentiles were aware of the fact that the kosher meat was a better quality. So they'll take that for themselves, they'll go into Pathmark, buy you the one, put it into the bag. So if you can't tell that it wasn't tampered, you are indeed not allowed to eat it. That's what the Torah is talking about. So let's just read one of his cases. Hameniach nachri b'chanuto. Somebody had a Gentile employee in his store. Ubo midvarim. And there happened to be in that store. Sha'afilu im huchlufu. Even if they were switched. Yesh bohen isur Torah. That if they switch something, what might be the switched product? Something which is asur, not only midrabanan, but asur what? Midoraita. Says the Tur, mutar, you're allowed to eat this, and what don't you have to be afraid of? That he switched it. Velo chayshinan shema hichlif lahakshilo. We are not afraid. We don't have to be concerned that perhaps he switched it in order to make you stumble and eat non-kosher. Elo im kain nehene b'chalipin. Only if there is any possible advantage to what? To switching it. So I just gave you a case. If you're a butcher store and you go out, And the next, the Beis Yosef will say, why are people leaving their store? They're going to Dab Mincha, quick Mincha in the Shtibel, down the block. So if there is no advantage to switching it, under those circumstances, you can assume, why would he switch it if he's not going to gain anything? Just to make your life miserable, you wouldn't do such a thing like that. You have a certain trust, and he recognizes that you have a certain trust in him. But if he can gain something, a financial benefit from it, then of course you're not allowed to. Right. The afilu imnehene b'chalipin, and even if he what? Can and does derive a profit from switching it, im hu yotze v'nichnas, if you, the owner, are what? Going in and going out, yotze v'nichnas, O afilu shahazman rav, even if you were out for a long time, velo hodio, and I didn't tell him, shidato lishos, that I'm planning on what? Being out for 2 hours? Mutter. So here you have a halacha known as yotze v'nichnas. And that is one of the Gemara's possible ways of setting up a hashgacha. And we, in our va'ad, we rely on yotze v'nichnas for certain restaurants. For example, dairy restaurants, bagel places, Dunkin' Donuts and things like that. We rely on yotze v'nichnas. So our mashgichim go in, they never tell them what day of the week they're coming, they never tell them what time I'm coming, and just go into the back, check all the ingredients, and so on and so forth. Meat establishments, we don't allow that. You have to have hashgachat tamidit, based on the halach of basar shenit aleim min ha'ayin. If meat, kosher meat, has been unsupervised for even 5 minutes, so meat becomes prohibited unless you have a sign on everything, if there is a siman. But no butcher who's running a butcher shop is going to take, he's going out to daven mincha, is going to bother to what? To wrap everything up, put a sign on it, he'll spend the whole day doing that. So there you have to have hashgacha tmidit, and that's at least our vad's policy.
Are you watching the meat though directly, or let's say you're just in the store? That means, let's say it's a bigger establishment, I'm just curious. Let's say you're in the supermarket, like
right?
Does he have to stay?
No, he doesn't. He just has to be there at all times.
Not watching.
No. He can go to different departments, right? He can go
to the
exactly. If the Gentile, he's the deterrent. If he's there all the time, the workers know I better not touch anything, because if I do, he just can pass by in a second and catch me. Right? Good. Now, commenting on this, we have page number 3. I want to focus on line 3, fourth word, where it says Yud Aleph Amud Bet, in parentheses. Does everybody see it? Katuv B'Shibalei Haleket. The Shibalei Haleket is an Ashkenaz scholar of the 13th century, and here the Beit Yosef in the 15th century is quoting the Shibalei Haleket. The Beit Yosef is a very good collector of a lot of different sources. We saw previously Beit Yosef quoted the Rashba. So Rabbi Yosef Karo had enormous breadth of Sheilot and Shuvot. So here he's quoting the Shibalei Haleket. Here is the case. Goy Shehichnis Chalav L'toch Kederat Yisrael L'haches. A Gentile deliberately put... Okay. But here, it's not... Here, 1 second. Asur L'ha'achila. Now, I can't what? I certainly can't eat it. Because I'm not allowed to eat Basa B'chalav. But I can't even give it to whom? To that Gentile. I didn't make this Basa B'chalav. He did. I can't lo la oisa goy v'lo legoyim acherim. I can't give it to him or to anybody else. Kidei shelo yulmedu la'asot kein. Because if I'm going to give it to him, he'll tell all his friends. I got a very simple way. Just stand there while they're right there. Just pour some milk. Oh, I'm sorry. Or even if you did it deliberately. We don't want that to happen. But here comes the next shocking words, which are directly relevant to us. The guy sha'amar l'Yisrael. Not that he saw. He told a Jew, al tochal mehakdeira, don't eat from anything from this pot. Why? She'ani hishlachti ba chalav. And now, it could very well be that this is not chalav. That it could be chalav. Why do I say it could be chalav and probably is? Chalav is prohibited fat. Why do I think it is chalav? Because basar b'chalav, I have a much better reason why I can't give it to the Gentile. Because it's asur b'hana. I'm not allowed to derive any benefit. So if I give somebody anything for free, what will I gain from that person? He'll be very nice to me. You know what? He'll give me something. He'll buy me a bottle of liquor that's kosher liquor. Why? Because I keep giving him all of my non-kosher meat that's basar b'chalav. Chalev is not asur b'hana'a. It's only asur b'achila. So it's probably chalev. What did the Gentile do? He said, I put non-kosher fat in this particular pot. Okay. So now he's telling us. He's telling us. I don't eat that. Jew, don't eat that. Ein mikablin mimenu. Said the Shibalei Haleket, you don't believe him. Ela muterati. It is perfectly permissible. Ad kan lishono. That's all he said. So far, neither the Rashba nor the Shibalei Haleket have given us a reason why we have a right to ignore it. Why we have a right to ignore it. And someone said that you're probably going to be pretty uncomfortable about eating it, and you're always going to be gnawing at you, but the halacha says you don't have to worry about it. Just sit down and enjoy it, and make believe you never heard the word chalev in this particular context. But this is a second case quoted by the Shibalei Haleket where this principle happens to what? To be applicable. The guy just told us, you know, I don't eat from this pot, I put chalev in. So, just...
What if it has the tam, though?
What?
What if it has the tam?
Excellent question. Mm-hmm. What happens if it has the taste? Mm-hmm. You're allowed to eat it. Mm-hmm. As shocking as that halacha is, you're allowed to eat it.
Mm-hmm.
Because halachically, I don't know if anybody put anything into it. I didn't put anything in that is chalev. It smells a little, tastes a little funny, smells a little funny. I don't have to worry about it.
But if there's no doubt in your mind that it tastes that way?
That's correct. Even if there is no doubt in your mind, you are permitted to eat it. What?
You could throw it away.
Of course you can. But you might violate a law about tashkis if you do. If you throw it out, you might violate a biblical prohibition of throwing away good meat.
You can get an honor from it, so you could give it to...
That's correct. So you can give it to somebody. Yes. But you're not going to get your money's worth by giving it to him. Good. Page number 4. Is the Ramah. So the Ramah says, the case of this Shulchan Aruch is talking about Stam Yena. Wine which is handled by a Gentile. That's the problem with most of our wines. We don't have Yayin Nesech today, real wine which is biblically prohibited because it was used as in the context of Avodah Zarah, where you pour the wine, Avodah Zarah, wine libations. We don't have that today. But we have plenty of Stam Yena, wine that have been handled and transported or anything handled or produced by a Gentile. So now, look at what happens here. It's line number 2 in the middle of the line. This is the Haggah, the Ramah. Balabayit she'omar l'shifchato, a owner of a house who said to his ozeret, l'hachin hashulchan, please set the table for us. Umatza yayin al shulchano. And lo and behold, he found an open bottle of wine on his table. I mention open because a closed bottle of wine, the Isur doesn't apply. The Gzeira Midrabbana. Vishivchato ho'ovedet kochavim. And his Gentile ozeret, omeret, shelakha hayayin mimar keifo shebo yayin harbe. She took the bottle from the attic where all of the wine was being stored, or the basement, wherever the wine was being stored, the wine cellar. Hayayin shebimar teif shari. All of the wines on the table and all of the wines upstairs, they're all permissible. How did the wine get there? I have no clue. If she didn't bring it there, who put it there? I have no idea. But the fact that she is the one who reported the information, I took the wine from upstairs, from the wine cellar, downstairs from the wine cellar, and I put it on the table, just make believe she didn't say a thing. And you are allowed to drink that wine and any other bottle that she may have handled in that wine cellar. We don't trust her. She doesn't have halachic trustworthiness because she's making a problem by reporting this very innocently. No one asked her where you got the wine from. She just said, oh, I brought it down. You told me to set the table. I know you like wine, so I brought some wine for you. You're allowed to go ahead and drink it. You're allowed to go ahead and drink it.
The difference in general is if you're saying if you're in a restaurant because you see the person pouring it?
Of course.
If you didn't see it, you could assume that...
If you didn't see it, then how did it get to your table? When you order wine in a restaurant, it's not coming by itself.
It was there when I walked into the restaurant. No one said anything to me. So I don't know who put it there. A Jew, a guy, I don't know.
Okay. So then under those circumstances, you probably would have a right to drink it. Yes. Unless you knew for a fact somebody that a Gentile handled it. That's correct.
Another
yes.
I work in a store.
What type of a store?
It's closed.
Oh, so you're saying unopened. I thought you said the gazera. I thought you said
only applies to opened. Unopened.
Is not an issue.
Correct. So when a waiter or waitress, when you bring you a bottle of wine, they can open it. If they open it, that's it. They have to put the bottle there. You open it. And you have to pour. You can't have them pouring the wine for you.
But they can't open it.
What? Mevushel, there's no issue.
Yeah.
That's why a lot of stores will only allow a mevushel bottle of wine to be brought in. That's correct. In fact, in Teaneck, not all places, but in Teaneck, in many restaurants, you're allowed to bring in your own personal wine. But the mashkiach has to make sure that it's what?
Mavushal.
That it's mevushel. There's been a lot of discuss at the RCBC level whether we should maintain that policy. A lot of people are upset with it, you know, that it's setting something up for problems. But that's the way the policy still is.
Meaning they want you to allow
mevushel
wine, or they want
no wine? No, those would say no wine whatsoever. Because, you know, the mashkiach's busy for a couple of minutes, wherever it is, he's looking somewhere else, and now you bring in a bottle of wine without him checking it, and it could be not mevushel, and then you're going to have the waiter or waitress to open it up for you, and then it's open, they're handling it, it's a problem.
Well, there was that restaurant in Manhattan that was the whole controversy, that they allowed
non-mevushel wines.
They did, and then it was closed down.
Which one was this?
Was that Jezebel that was open for a while?
Could be.
There was a whole thing about it.
Could be.
You can't trape up the glass. Even if they did, they're pouring cold wine into a glass goblet, so...
Midda Oraisa, nothing is a problem. Midda Rabbanan, everything is a problem.
But why? If I had...
The glass itself? Probably not. No.
I'm not going to trape anything
No.
up.
No. No. No, it's not that because it has to. It's cold. That's why. It's not a problem. That's correct. That's correct. So that's another case. Again, the exact same principle. Exact same principle. Yeah. Page number 5, which is a shach. But we should actually take a look at page number 6 first before we see page number 5. So there is a statement of Rav Ashi which is very relevant to our discussion. Amar Rav Ashi, says Rav Ashi, this is a Gemara in Bava Kamma. Ein masiach lefi tumo kasher elo le'edut isha bilvad. This whole concept, which we have been talking about tonight, where a Gentile is masiach lefi tumo, never works in Jewish law other than by a case of edut isha. Why does it work by Eidut Isha? Because the rabbis, we know, already lifted the biblical requirements that normally would have been needed and necessary to allow this woman to remarry. There is a principle which is called davar shebe'erva. Anything that affects the marital status of a man and woman, says the Gemara in many places, ein davar shebe'erva pachot mishnayim. Pachot mishnayim. Where does the Torah actually demand two witnesses? Where does the Torah make reference to the need for two witnesses? What type of cases? That's correct. By a murder case, it says, Al pishnayim edim yumat hamet. If Bet Din wants to put somebody to death for murdering somebody anytime, then it can only be done based on the testimony of two kosher witnesses.
Who are in the same spot, seeing the same exact thing.
That's exactly it. Yes. What else does the Torah say requires? No, Torah doesn't say anything about adultery. That it requires two witnesses. What else does it say? That's not. There are no two witnesses there. There's only one at best. Al pishnei edim yakum davar by dini mamonos. Monetary concerns. I claim that you bashed my window. Okay, here's my broken window, and I claim that you did it. Beis Din will not prosecute you unless I have two witnesses who will testify in court that you broke my window. And those two witnesses, both for Dine Mamonot and Dine Nefashot, require two kosher witnesses. Two male Shomrei Shabbat. Somebody who was a Mechal Shabbos is disqualified to offer testimony in court. Not accepted his testimony at all. It's not only Chilul Shabbos, but certainly Chilul Shabbos.
And what's the definition of Shomer Shabbos? Because it's so different.
I know. I'm not talking about somebody who brushed their teeth with toothpaste on Shabbos, which Rav Moshe Feinstein says is Aser Medol Raisa. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about something which is universally prohibited by everybody. Like you turned on a light. Everybody says you're not allowed to turn on a light on Shabbos. Drive a car, right? So those types of things. So, and there are no waiving of it under those circumstances. In order to affirm the marital status in any situation, marriage, divorce, chalitza, yibum, they always require two witnesses. It's learnt out from Dine Mamonos, but it's not black on white. It's learnt out Gzeirus Shava from Dine Mamonos. Because the word davar, al pishnei edim yakum davar, the word davar appears by Dine Mamonos, and by marital status, it says matzaba ervat davar. So therefore, it requires two witnesses. But since it doesn't say it black on white, the Chachamim decided to be very liberal and accept the testimony of Eid Echad. And that Eid Echad can even be a non-kosher Eid Echad. So it can be a Gentile, it can be a woman, even though normally women cannot testify in court. For this, to enable a woman to remarry, we will allow this lower standard of confirmation. There are two explanations as to why. Two explanations why we make this allowance here. And that's going to help explain Ravashi's point of view. Explanation number one. It's milta da'avide ligluye. Anybody want to take a stab at it? Milta means an item. Da'avide ligluye. Mazel legalot. It's going to become public information. If somebody is reporting that this man was killed in a car accident, eventually it's going to make the daily news. Make the daily news. So since it's what? it's something that is bound to become public information, the assumption is that this person doesn't want to ruin his or her reputation by lying through their teeth. So if they're going to report that the husband died and then 2 weeks later the husband comes marching in, he's going to look like his reputation in town will be totally soiled. And as a result, the assumption which the halacha makes is that he is not going to lie. Lo mishaker. That's explanation number one. Explanation number two, why we accept this testimony, is that isha daika uminsiba. The woman herself will be very careful to check out that this guy is telling the truth. Why will this woman make sure that he's telling the truth? Because what are the consequences if he happens to be alive? And what happens? Any child they conceive will be a mamzer. They have to get divorced, the husband and wife, and she's not allowed to live with the second guy either. So there are disastrous consequences. So therefore, the halacha assumes that since the wife will investigate properly, we can believe this one witness. Rab Kiveger tells us, I'm going to give you a case which will illustrate the difference between reason number one and reason number two. Okay? The woman whose husband disappeared was already once divorced. And now, after she is relying on this testimony, who is she going to marry? A Kohen. She's going to marry a Kohen. That's what her plans are, to marry a Kohen. Now, on what basis is she going to marry a Kohen? Based on the testimony of one person who said, your husband is dead, so you're not an Ashes Ish, you're not married any longer. But now she's planning on marrying a Kohen. Now what happens if a Grusha marries a Kohen? Are they married?
Yes,
they are. You're not allowed to, but the marriage is valid. So that case, says Rabbi Kiveger, is dependent on the two explanations. If I use one of them, she is allowed to marry. Not allowed to, but the marriage will go through because she is legally widowed. If you accept the other answer, we will say we are not going to believe her and she's not widowed any longer. And if she's not widowed, she's not going to do that. So which is the one which you would say you accept and which one don't you accept? Okay, so let me explain this again. I offer two explanations why you would accept the testimony of one person to enable a woman to marry based on the fact that somebody is reporting her husband was killed. I gave two explanations. One is, A, it's become a matter of public information. Two, she will check it out thoroughly. Good. So tell me which one of those two will work in the case which I developed for you, and which explanation will be worthless. Yes!
The second explanation is worthless.
Of course, why?
She doesn't care, she's marrying a Cohen.
Exactly.
She should just marry a Cohen.
Obviously, she doesn't check very well to make sure that she's allowed to marry. Because she's planning to marry a Cohen.
She's already been divorced.
So what? And she was already once divorced. So why is she planning to marry a Kayan? Apparently she couldn't care less. So if she couldn't care less, if she's not Daika Uminsiba, then we can't trust the Eid Echad. And as a result, she is still legally married, which will now preclude her from marrying anybody, let alone this Kohen. She won't be able to marry anybody. Beis Din will not grant her a release. They will say she is still married, based on the fact that we know you're married and we don't have ample evidence to prove that your husband had died. This is always, a very tricky thing. With the World Trade Center and there's so many others. Rav Avadi Yosef, one of his major, major accomplishments, he got the Pras Yisrael for this, was that after the Yom Kippur War,
He was matir 773 women whose husbands had disappeared, lost, they were unaware of, unaccountable, but he worked on every single file and found a heter for every single one of the 773 women to enable them to remarry.
That was, don't they do something now where before they go to war?
Yes, that's called gite milchama. Yeah. That's
they,
correct.
They did that years ago.
I know. So they don't necessarily do it today.
Indeed.
But in the time of the Gemara, they always did that. Or the time of Tanakh.
They could do it now.
They could. In theory, you can do it. It's not a problem. But anyhow, what did I want to say?
You could do it, but okay. You're not doing her a favor if she wants to give your marriage to a Kohen.
What?
You're not doing her a favor.
Correct. That's correct. But see, the halacha, if it had accepted the testimony of that guy, that would be a separate issue. She's no longer married, so now, if she married this Kohen, would she be married to him? She would be. If the testimony of that one witness was not accepted, she's not married to this guy. She's committed adultery under those circumstances. That's a very big difference. So she's willing to go ahead and marry a Kohen, but I'm not willing to go ahead and engage in adultery. That's the difference. My mother has a friend who 60 years ago got married, and her husband disappeared 1 week after the wedding, and they still have not found him. The FBI was involved, the CIA, everything. They had everything. 1 week, he went to work after the Sheva Brachos, his first day of work, never came home. Nobody ever found him. And it's been over 60 years that she, unfortunately, is in Aguna.
Wow.
Over 60 years. Very good friend of my mother. Over 60 years. And every great Rav Henkin was involved. Everybody tried to. They couldn't find any etifer. And the guy, like,
disappeared. Any what?
Any licensed, any heter, yeah. Any reason, any justification for it. They couldn't.
No amount of time, like X amount of time.
No amount of time.
Yes.
For, the guy, who knows what happened to him? Yes.
Rabbi Oshri has a tshuva from Lithuania.
Right.
Woman whose husband was taken to the camps, and people said, oh, he was went to the showers, he was killed, and after the war she remarried.
And he came back.
And she had a son, and the son grew up, became a rav in a community.
I remember that. I did that tshuva once here.
Right?
Did
and
that.
Then, and then the first husband came back.
That's correct.
And then what?
And he wouldn't, they want him to kind of keep it quiet and not do anything.
He didn't.
He didn't, and right? The man had to leave his job.
Correct.
In a school. And
yeah. It's one of the it's one of the real tragedies
then
when that happens.
Can't be with either of them.
Right? That's correct.
She was dead already, I think.
Oh, I don't remember, but yeah, yeah. But she, the halacha is she cannot remain with either of them. So Ravashi says this explains why Ravashi says this is the only time we'll accept the testimony of a Gentile being masiach lefitumo. Because there is a corroborating piece of logic for it. Either that the woman will check, or what? It's going to be a matter of public record, what happened to a human being. By a piece of meat that absorbed a drop of milk, that's not going to become a matter of public record. That's not where somebody has the capacity to investigate. You can't do anything about investigating that. Therefore, Ravashi says, the heter of masiach lefitumo only applies in this case. Only applies
to me.
Only to Isha. To allow a woman to remarry, do not apply it at all to any of the cases that we've talked about tonight. And go back to page number 5. And go down to the fourth line. To the fourth line, im kain, eich yihyeh oved kochavim ne'emand b'masiach lefitumo. How is it possible that anybody, and he's attacking everybody who we saw, the Rashba, this one, that one, the Mechaber and Shulchan Aruch, says you can rely on Masiach Lefi Tumah. We saw it 50 times. I showed it to you inside. The Haloshas Aruchahi, it's a well-developed piece of Gemara, the Perek HaGozel Basra, that's the 10th Perek of Maseches Bava Kamma. The Ein Oved Kochavim, Masiach Lefi Tumo, that's what the abbreviation is, Ne'eman Be'isur Torah, Ela Be'edut Isha Levad. Ela Isha Levad. U'paskuhu, and the following great authorities follow this rule. The Bahala, Balalachus Gedolot. Two, the Rif. Three, the Rush. Four, the Smag. All paskin that way. So how can everybody just rely on Masiach Lutumai to eat a piece of meat, but somebody said, how can you rely on it? For afal pisha medivri haramba mushar poskim mashmad gamken de masamchinan aovit kachavim the lav kfeilu b'masiach lefitumai. He says, the Rambam does say it, that you rely on this masiach lefitumai, but I don't understand it. He's outvoted by everybody else that I just enumerated. So the Shach is troubled that everything that we've discussed tonight and all of the other cases where you rely on beefsteak, not beefsteak Charlie, on a regular Gentile to take a piece of meat upon which a drop of milk spilled, and you ask him, how does this taste? Does this taste like what? Cheeseburger, or does it taste like a hamburger? So if he's not aware of why you're asking that question, even if he's not beefsteak, you can trust him. Ask the Shach why. And everybody relies on it. And that's he's troubled with it. He's troubled with it. But in any event, all of the cases which we saw tonight support the premise that when do we accept Eid Echad, Masiach Lefitumo, only Lehatir, Velo Leesor. Therefore, even if this Ozeret told her Balabasta about it, the Balabasta has no obligation whatsoever to tell the other family, but I recommended that they...
This is a true story.
I didn't make it up. That they should tell her in any event, and the two things have to happen. Number one is, no, the husband should learn a lesson that you have to treat people with dignity and respect. And the Chavetz Chaim said, as he's wrote this, that he used to have one of these Ozrot in his house. She came in to whatever it was, clean up. He honored, people said about the Chavetz Chaim, he honored her with such derech eretz, more than any member of his family. That's how careful the Chavetz Chaim was. Not to baledika, insult her and embarrass her. Treat her like with the greatest respect possible. And that person has to be told that you can't treat, just because she's not Jewish and she's obviously not on your economic stature, that you can treat anybody like this. And to be aware of the fact that although technically you're allowed to eat it, now that I'm telling you, you know, either you have to ask her to leave, or and you have to, the next one, you got to treat her a little more properly to make sure that there's no cause for this in the first place.
Isn't it the job of the rabbi to do that? Obviously, like a woman can't go and tell this man, like, if you were
someone
in your shul, wouldn't you be the one to go and say,
yeah, I probably
I've heard
would.
These
rumors, yes.
He's not
going to
listen to
someone. Yes. No, a good friend they might listen to. Yeah, that we. Yeah, I would.
As far as the actual, but the consequence, though, there's no.
He doesn't have the kosher, you're saying, anything.
Make believe the information never was reported. That's why I started off saying it's a shakaru. It's a shakaru.
There's no objective kosher. That's what it implies.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you the following question. When you cook non-kosher meat in a pot, okay?
When?
And then you did it by mistake, but you found out about it. Then you want to know, can you use this pot to cook kosher? So what? You know the answer. You can't. Why can't you? Why can't you use this pot? Because the taste, the heat's going to purge the taste. Now I ask you, is this reality? Is it real that the taste is imbued in the walls of a pot and then it's purged? The taste is purged? Is that really true? Or is it just halachic truth? Is it true based on the laws of physics and chemistry? Or is it only halachic truth?
I think it's halachic.
That's what a lot of people say.
But heat does cause chemical reactions.
I'm not saying it doesn't.
Excuse me, the glass for the 3 days in the thing. There's nothing. That is pure halachic.
I know. Yeah. There's
no chemistry in that.
Okay. I know. So, I don't know. But the fact is, that's what the halacha says. I know. You're smart that you don't have... You can, the rest of your life, you can use that pot knowing that it was basa b'chala.
I think we want to feel there's an absolute truth.
I know. We want to. But it may not be so. I'm not sure. I don't know. What?
That's why Lo B'chomer is.
Yes? Okay. What?
Have they invited you for lunch?
Would I eat there?
Have they invited
you? No. No, they have not. I would eat there, of course. Especially if she's a good cook.
The Ozeret, like, even though he was wrong and he should be corrected, how could you ever trust her again? I
That's
would want someone like that. 100%.
Because
even if she's angry, she could come to the wife.
100%, no doubt.
100%.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly.
But it's not a lot of it. You have to fire.